Well, good afternoon, everyone, and sorry for the delay there. Welcome to the July 6th Development and Engineering Advisory Board meeting. Just a reminder that this meeting is being recorded and the audio will be posted on the website. First item here is review and adoption of minutes. Oh, sorry. Thank you. Yeah, let's start with introductions. Seth Holling with AKS Engineering.
Ryan Wilson with Wilson Architects.
Dan Weisner, Songbird Homes.
Eric Lima, SJ Engineering.
Mike Odrin, McKay Sposito.
Andrew Gunther, PLS Engineering.
Megan Fletcher, Community Development. Sherry Jones, Southwest Washington Contractors Association.
Nicole Pizek, Community Development.
Noelle Levern, BIA of Clark County.
Max Booth, Community Development.
And that is everyone who's in the room here. So if you guys online could run through and introduce yourselves, please.
Brent Davis, Community Development.
April 1st, Community Development.
Diana Ned, Community Development.
Oliver Ojako, Community Planning.
Jennifer Reynolds, Clark County Development Engineering.
Teresa Hardy, Friends of Clark County.
Houston Aho, Aho Construction.
Justin Wood, Clark County Association of Realtors.
Rod Swanson, Zach Clark Lane. County Public Works.
All right, well, now on to review and adoption of minutes.
Mr. Chair, I have reviewed the minutes and move for approval.
All right, is there a second?
I second that.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Next item, review of upcoming events. Megan?
Council meeting on June 18th at 6 p.m. in regards to two CPZ projects. July 5th, 25th at 10 a.m. housing code amendments. There's a link there on the agenda. Work sessions, July 12th at 9 a.m. compensation study from Baker Tilly and some employment projection comp plan. July 19th at 9 a.m. the draft of the Vancouver Lake Management Plan, July 26th, 8:30 a.m., transfer stations, and August 2nd at 9 a.m., transportation system plan, environmental public fee schedule. The Planning Commission hearings did link up with the counseling hearings as well, so that's what I have.
Hearing, is that for the housing option study?
The link says housing code amendments.
Okay.
So that would most likely be the biannual
board? I'm guessing it would be. I'm just trying to look
here. No, okay. Not biannual.
Say again?
We're not doing biannual yet. We don't have one planned yet, so that would not be what that is.
So this would be the housing options, the first round.
And is I that would a assume.
Hearing? Okay. And is that a hearing or just a closed meeting that they're talking about it?
It's a council hearing at 10 a.m. on the 25th.
Okay.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah, I read about it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's up there to talk about everything.
Okay.
They'll be talking about it.
I got to reschedule a meeting then. Doing that right now. I was supposed to present at some lunch, so.
All right, next item is member announcements. Are there any members with announcements?
Dan, did you attend one of the hearings?
How'd I go? I went to Planning Commission.
Oh, good.
And I tell you that 3 minutes is very short.
Yeah.
the Planning Commission, the discussion basically boiled down to that the Planning Commission felt that there was about 85% of the work was complete, but there was still some work needed to be done. They were told by the staff attorney in the room that they did not have the ability to make any request for modification. It was approve and move it forward, or kick it back, or deny it. So they thought it was close enough that they would approve it, move it forward, and push it to the council.
Was it unanimous?
No.
Oh, it was not unanimous. What was the vote?
I don't remember. It's like 4-2.
Okay.
3-2. So 4-1.
All right. Thank you.
All right. With regard to the work sessions on employment projection and the transportation system plan, do we know if those are items that will come be presented to DEEB soon?
I have no idea. Transportation system plan, environmental public fee schedule. We usually review fees. Yeah, when is our next meeting? Should say here, August 3rd, so it would not be presented. So that's just a work session. So that shouldn't be, I would think that there'd still be time for, Brent, I would assume that these fees are in response to the new WETHAB ordinance?
I'm not aware of what those fees are. They're not related to land use or wetland and habitat.
Oh, okay, because it says environmental public fee schedule. So, environmental health. Oh, could be absolutely, yeah.
It is public health.
Public health, okay, thank you. Well, you might want to get request an update on the transportation system plan if that's going to be something that's going to be coming down the pike here in a little bit. That's a work session. Is that something we can get? Is there somebody on that is familiar with the transportation system plan that's set up for the August 2nd County Council work session? I guess not.
This is Oliver.
Yeah.
If DEEB requires that we all request that we show up and present that transportation system plan to DEEB, we will certainly do so. The transportation staff in my department are the ones that are pushing that, are working on it. They were working on it when they were in public works. Now that they are in community planning, we can certainly come before DEEB and share the information. It's a plan that wants to combine all the transportation opportunities and trying to put different programs that Public Works works on, try to put that into one system plan, if you will. But we will certainly come to DEEB to share the information with you. What we will be asking the council is to continue the work and then fold it in as part of the current growth plan update. At this point, I don't know whether it will be a supporting document to the transportation element. We are just internally discussing how that will work. As some of you are aware, the city of Vancouver has a transportation system plan, so this will be mirroring what the city currently has.
Yeah, I think that would be consistent with what we've had presented to us before. That so this isn't the tip, though, is it?
No.
How does it differ from the tip?
It will incorporate tip. In terms of projects that the six-year project and the process that Public Works goes through in identifying project that will be on the tip. So that will be part of it. Other programs that is in transport in Public Works will also be part of it, but yes, TIP will be part of it. So that what it means is that we will have an integrated system where everyone is following up on whatever the comprehensive plan policy is set by council as it relates to transportation and delivery. Gotcha. Yeah, so that's what it will all be all about. It will not be new project, but we would like to see all these different programs be looked at holistically as it relates to growth in Clark County and the necessary infrastructure to be in place so that there is what I may call a system plan that everyone is focusing and following on.
Okay. Does the rest of the board feel that that would be good for staff to present that at some point in time? It sounds like it includes the TIP, and I think that we had went through that last week, a few months ago, yeah. So I don't know if that's necessary or not.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't sure if it was relating more to updates to the capital facilities plan relating to the transportation element specifically. And
sounds like that's what it might be, as it's TIP's going to be a part of it. It's taking just a more holistic approach to transportation system. So I don't know. Might be good. Might be a waste of time.
Yeah, I guess in for myself, I'd be more interested in just seeing proposed updates and changes to the transportation system plan. And, you know, if those are, you know, being updated at this time, that's something that I guess I'd be interested in seeing.
Well, maybe what staff can do is they'll have a PowerPoint presentation for the work session for council. So maybe Oliver, when you have I would assume you'll have a PowerPoint presentation. You just want to send that to Megan and she can send that out to us and we can take a look.
Yeah.
Kind of do it like that way instead of having, you know, taking time, staff time to come in and present and stuff. And
yeah.
Okay.
We can do that. Certainly.
Oh, that'd be great. Thank you. Okay.
You're welcome.
I'll stop now.
You're welcome. Okay. Next item is regarding the open position, the public sector seat on the advisory board.
Thank you, Seth. I just wanted to forward the information to the board. The board will need to meet and discuss that, not in this forum, and write a letter of recommendation that can be forwarded to me, and then I can forward on to Kathleen's group for council recommendation.
So do we want to probably do this over email? I already have some thoughts about each individual.
Yeah, that's my understanding, is other advisory boards have done it via email. So
okay, cool. Why don't you send us out a reminder next week sometime and we start that chain.
But we did put together comments for the housing option study. And then did the Planning Commission have time to look at it? Did they react to it?
Yes, there was The Planning Commission was very appreciative of the letter that you put together, Eric. Explained it a lot on those certain issues. The comments were very positive about the feedback based upon your comments, you know, based upon our comments. So there was a lot of appreciation for that. I think the big thing that we see going forward are that going forward, and I think Houston Aho was online, so he made the great comment of the unintended consequences of this whole housing option study is what I'm seeing as a townhouse developer is that I cannot buy land and compete against what the apartment guys can pay for it. So it becomes very difficult for the less dense developer to buy land as the price gets set to the highest one. And for most, you know, for everybody, that is a big, big financial decision when they're selling their land that is ballooned in value. So they're going to want the most for it, and I can understand that. Sure. So the unintended consequence is pretty soon it's going to force the developer into being as dense as allowed.
And then also non-owner occupied product. So it changes to rental product, which over time becomes less affordable because, you know, when you own your home, you get your mortgage fixed in 10, 20 years, that payment's still about the same, right? You know, with maybe a little more in property taxes, things like that. But with rent, it goes up. So for affordability in the long term, owning is way better than renting. So we do want to create opportunities for lower cost home ownership opportunities, not just rental product. But I wanted to also make sure that the board got that letter. I'm not sure, did it get forwarded to the board already as well? Or maybe it's too early. Yeah. So the housing options, our recommendation letter.
Oh. It was forwarded on to the council. They have it.
Okay. We talked in, I think, some emails back and forth with staff and maybe the consultant about maybe going over some of those. So instead of going to the council divided, maybe we can come to some common ground on some of these items and maybe make some recommendations together to the board and kind of talk through what our concerns are. So when we go to the board, it's not, you know, us against staff or the consultant, that we can go in with the united front and understand the positions and the concerns and maybe address some of them that staff can get on board with, or you know, if we can explain why we're concerned about certain items, and maybe we can change our position before we have to do it in a public forum. Mm-hmm. So just I'd like to throw that out there and ask for consideration, because I think it'd go a lot smoother. And well, I think a lot of the comments are pretty valid.
What are you talking about? Go ahead, Dan.
I was going to say, and the planning commission themselves, I mean, again, they were thought that the work, there was a great deal of good work that was done. It was just incomplete, and there was conflicts within it. There was some questions that were raised about how do you handle this? How's this going to impact? So there's incompleteness of the work at this point. And that's what they were concerned about, was that that it was good to move forward. It was the right direction. It was all the stuff that was needed, but it still needed some work and some tuning, and that kind of comes down to, when is that going to happen? How is that going to happen?
I mean, I think some of the biggest ones were the design standards, and even talking to the consultant that worked on it, it's like, yeah, this is kind of just more of a wish list. We didn't expect to get all these through. Well, if that's what they actually feel, then why are we doing that at this point? And when you talk about the unintended consequences, Let's do that now, because they're going to have some significant impacts. We're going to create a code that no one's going to build to, or they're going to build to because they have to, but that's not what the public wants. They're going to build less desirable product, and it's actually going to cost them more money. And it's the exact opposite of what we're trying to do. But they'll build it because that's the only thing they can build. So it becomes social engineering instead of what the market wants and what people want. And what the value is too. So trying to get an appraisal on a home that has no garage or a one car garage that you can't even put a car in is not going to appraise. So.
Us in the room can't see visually, but if somebody online had something to say, please go ahead.
So what kind of forum are we talking about? Are you considering this?
Well, I think if staff and the consultant wants to go over some of our concerns, and maybe we can work some of these things out before it goes to hearing. And then we can do a kind of an adjustment of, here was the original recommendations based on Deeb's comments. We're recommending now the following revisions. And if we can come up with something like that that goes to the council, it makes all of our jobs a lot easier. And again, the intentions are good on both sides. We just, I think it's worth looking at what the concerns are, because they come from people in the industry who build homes, and they know what the financial implications are and what the market demand is. So it's worth looking at and making some changes to the recommendations.
But there were people on the stakeholder committee, Dan, you being one of them, I'm sure that we're vocal about
the proposed design standards then.
Yeah.
I mean, and so you're vocal about it then. Now the recommendations have come out. Proposed code has come out. We're in like the 11th hour. Is that really, do you think that we're going to get anywhere with that, Eric?
Well,
just based on the fact that we've already told them in a number of different, or is it just
the planning commission had concerns about the design elements also?
Oh,
so there was, but again, what they were told was you can't, you know, it's the package in front of you is approve or
right.
Not.
Yeah, yeah.
So
can't pick and
you
choose.
Can't pick and choose. Yeah, yeah. You can't go through and modify. You can't make recommendations to go back and work on something. It was approve or deny. And it was, all right, well, it's the right way. It's the right path. The product is mostly good. And so the expectation is, you know, it will be fixed going forward. And that my question is, okay, when do you actually see the actual code and say, no, this is going to cause this unintended consequence.
Right.
This is going to cause, you know, as I look at the code, that's the way it's designed right now, you put those design elements, which already have, you know, some design elements in the cottages, but you allow basically townhouses. You know, I've built both.
Mm-hmm.
The way the code's written, guess what? You just enforced me to build more and more townhouses. And I know people
because
like
of the
cottage
density issue.
Because of some of the design elements and some of the different things that are going on. So,
Well,
and because of the condo liability laws within the state of Washington, to where basically we will not build any condos more than like, you know, 4 units, which is not really a condo.
Sure.
Because we, you know, we've been down that path before, and the liability rules are just an issue to where, you know, getting insurance and mm-hmm. following up and, you know, the condo defect liability is just too great.
So if for the planning commission it was approved, deny, or send back to staff, and now it goes to council, do they have the ability to pick and choose?
Yeah. But what I'm saying is if we can work together with staff and the consultant, that's going to be a lot easier.
Sure.
Because right now our position is going to be, we need to go back to the drawing board.
My concern is that staff and the consultant have spent a lot of time and effort on this, and I don't know how willing they are to go back and redo what they figured was already a finished product.
During the process, we did voice concerns. Dan and I were both on that committee, and we expressed some concerns. And at the time, it seemed like they were going to make the changes or consider them. It didn't get done at that stage, and they still moved some of those design standards forward. But I think that since then, we've had a little more time to compile our concerns, to say why it is the way it is. And in those meetings, there's so much information, it's like drinking out of a water hose. They didn't get all of them. And we didn't have time to sit there and talk about that item for 20 minutes.
Right.
You know, we had to cover a lot of code and a lot of different things in a 2-hour meeting. And, you know, 80% of it, 90% of it, we probably agree with staff on. It's that extra, you know, 10 to 20% that has huge implications. And those are the ones that we maybe need to go back to the drawing board, talk to them about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear why staff's so concerned about it, or why they feel strongly about the recommendation they're making. And then we'll make our decision. Maybe we can kind of understand each other's positions a little bit better, and then go to council with a recommendation that we're on the same page.
Uh-huh.
Instead of going in and say, this isn't going to work, and then staff saying, well, this is a better design, and then council's going to throw their hands up again. This has happened time and time again, and they're not going to have clear direction or consensus. If we can work together, and that's what this board has done really well in the past, is going in with some common ground to the hearing. So I'm just putting that out there.
Question. So let's assume Mike's right. We're at the 11th hour. It's too late, right? We can't compile everyone. We can't do anything. And it is approved as is. What is the process to change to modify it after? Like, when does that process?
Code amendments.
Yeah, it's a big mess. It's 3 times as much work as it would be to get it right the first time. And it's not too late, because it hasn't even gone to work session or hearing with the council yet. They haven't even started looking at it or reviewing it. If they can review something that we're all on board, it makes their job easier. It makes staff's job easier. We'll end up with a better product.
Are we on a deadline, like a law like a goal that the state put? Like, what is the driver behind pushing this through maybe faster than it's ready for? Because it sounds like even the work group maybe didn't have enough time to peel back all the layers like they wanted to before it was pushed forward. So I guess my question is, why is it continuing to be pushed forward if we're not on a deadline? And maybe we are on a deadline and I'm just not aware of it.
I don't think there's a state deadline for this particular code, but they have a hearing scheduled July 25th. So what I see happening is if we go in without a united front, it's going to get continued two or three times, and they're going to send it back, and we're going to go back and forth. If we can get that out of the way to begin with, we could maybe get this thing done and approved without having to do a bunch of continuances.
So are you thinking a meeting in person or virtual with staff and the consultants, just those, a number of members of DEEB? I don't think we need to have the entire board involved, but that, and because we've talked about this and we've talked about it ad nauseum, we all understand the impact that particularly the design review standards can have based on our 20, 40, 60, 80, 100, based on our 120 or 140 combined years of experience.
So I guess my question is, I'm hesitant that I don't know, it's a tight timeline, right? So say you get a meeting next week, we're already the 11th of July, right? Or whatever that is next week. And then you have to have time to compile all that and get it. So I guess my question is there a way to delay getting this in front of the council? That's more my question.
They're sharing it on July 25th.
Maybe. It's really up to staff if they want to push it forward to council. It is already probably noticed. They're probably going to have a meeting. But that doesn't mean that we spent a lot of time and a lot of effort together going through our recommendations, and they're pretty well put together. If they have questions, my whole point of the comment was, we are available to work on it in advance so we can go on with it, you know, as a united front to the council, if staff would like to do that. So maybe if someone can pass that on, I think it'd make it a lot smoother, and we're not going to keep on getting continued and push it along.
Do you know who the staff liaison is?
I am here, and Eric, I think Mike was asking a very pertinent question. You, Eric, and Dan participated with the group. All these issues were raised. Staff looked at it. If you look at this, the actual design standard, it isn't that significant. I think you may go back to look at the compact subdivision and the cottage and look at what is the significant, what is the difference in terms of design standard that you're raising. So I think I agree with those that are saying this is like 11 hours. You all participated, you came to DEEB, you made your recommendation, you said this is 90% well done. I'm not sure where we disagree with you and the consultant, that staff will be asking.
Oliver, as an outsider, because I wasn't part of this group, I'm curious, what is the very quick version of the staff's perspective on the purpose of the design standards? Because I've heard in DEEB, and I'm aware of, you know, building costs, and when you restrict what is available to be built, now you're kind of from a visual aesthetic and materials, it's all tied together, and that increases cost. So what I'm hearing is the industry at the table saying that design standards limit the ability to be flexible and how they build a building, and the less flexibility they have, the quicker the cost rises. So I'm curious, what is the end goal that staff had with the design standards? That, because I think it's having the opposite impact of what it's intended from an affordability standpoint.
I agree. When you are building different housing type or housing product or proposing that, there's going to be some variation in types of building layout. We are not recommending that your roof be of a different type or your windows or any of that. It's just the street and how you do the street treatment, frontage, and so forth that we are really talking about, not how you design your home. So I think when you look at parking issue that came up, how many number of parking spaces are we going to be providing? Similarly, when you have a compact development where maybe the lot sizes are different from your regular single family home, you want some aesthetics, you want some appeal. Those are some of the things that we are suggesting. I don't think that staff is pushing this in order to get this in front of council as quickly as possible. There is no really deadline. What I will also recommend is I would like DIP to read the new legislation 1220, and you will agree that majority of the things that staff and the consultant are recommending is very consistent with that House Bill 1220. And that's all I can add.
So I guess really, Oliver, I don't think from what I'm hearing here, I don't think anyone has an issue with the plan. I think that there's a lot of changes that you just mentioned that they are on board for and they understand. I think it's really, it is the front facade design standards. I think that is the challenge that I think as, I'm not a home builder, but someone who buys a home, I want my house to be unique. And when you put in design standards, then all of them end up looking the same because the builders don't have the same flexibility. And so I think that's when Eric's made the driven home the point of it's not what the market wants. I think that's what the builders see, right? They want people don't want to live in a tract home that one looks the same as the next. And so when you, the unintended consequence of design standards, not only is the cost, but then you also end up with a lot of things that look exactly the same. And so while though that thing might look nice, you're going to have a lot of the exact same thing. And then your community start lacking character, your neighborhoods start lacking character, and your property values start to drop because people don't want to live there because it doesn't have the character that they're hoping for. So that is a non-builder perspective, just trying to make it less technical. I think that is kind of where I sit. I think allowing the industry to dictate those designs will have in the future, the longevity will achieve a lot of what the county is trying to do with this. But I don't know that it's going to happen with the design standards. So I don't know if there's a way to just pull that piece out before council. Yeah. If it's too late for that, I don't know.
I'm just kind of curious as to what staff has seen around Clark County that they have noticed in neighborhoods, in single-family residential neighborhoods, that warrant them regulating the design standards of these buildings. Or is it just the consultant saying, well, this is what we do other places, and so that you should do that here in Clark County. A lot of the neighborhoods that go up, let the builders provide the appeal. They've got to sell the house. Appeal isn't, you know, are you going to, for heaven's sakes, if we start this, are you going to start requiring design standards on commercial buildings? I certainly hope not. Oh, yeah.
Here's what I recommend. I would recommend that you take a hard look at the design standard that are being proposed, and then you come to the table to tell us how that is significantly different from what is in the code now.
Yeah, Oliver, that is exactly what's in our memo. So I guess what I'd request is, if you can take a look at that memo, we did exactly what you just requested, and we went into quite a bit of detail on what the challenges to those design standards are and how we would suggest changing them to address the issue without creating additional cost and less value to the end user. So that is exactly what we did. So what I guess we're hoping, and I don't want to take too much more time, it was just more of a comment that I wanted to offer. If staff would like to go over our comments with us, or the consultant would like to, we'd be happy to do that, and we're available to do that. That was pretty much all I wanted to say.
I have one last comment. Oliver, this group did review the mixed-use design standards and had challenges with that also. So the comparison to other design standards that the county has, the issue is just generally design standards that I think the industry strongly disagrees with having them in any code. So I don't know that the comparison would be of value, but appreciate the point.
I welcome all the comment, and I look forward to working with Deb as we move this forward. We are now currently into the multi-family district and seeing what type of changes that may be proposed. We are not there yet. I welcome all the comment, and we are open to continue dialogue, but I maintain that when we look at the, no one is proposing that, and no one is proposing that you do condominium. This code is not written that, you know, those that are going to be doing triplex or townhouses, that this will force you into doing condominium. That is not in the code. I share your concern about design, but I think this is limited to the compact subdivision, and the cottage housing section of the code is not universal in everything that is in the code. It's only pertaining to the subcompact development and the cottage development. Those are the two areas where we are looking at some distinction, and we're not going to be building cottage or subcompact development all over single family district. This may be very limited how you treat that. We were concerned about compatibility with the neighborhood and the neighborhood character and affordability. That's really the goal. No one is proposing that anyone go and build a condominium. That's not the direction that the county is for, the staff is focusing on. But I welcome the conversation. I just felt that Deb was part of that conversation from the beginning to the implementation of the code. So that is where we should have that dialogue. If we need extra time before we go to a hearing, I welcome that.
Thank you, Oliver.
All right. Well, thank you. Moving to the next item, House Bill 1042, House Bill 1337, and 5491. Max, please.
Yeah, thank you. There's not a whole lot to report here based on the research and discussion that Ryan and I had between the last meeting and this one, but I can give you the short version of each of the bills. 1042 is provisions for turning existing spaces, primarily aimed at commercial spaces, which don't contain dwelling units, and putting dwelling units inside of them and offering a path forward to do that with some provisions put in for that. The rub with 1042 is it's required for cities specifically, and counties are omitted from that. It becomes an optional thing for counties. I have forwarded that information to Oliver's group to see how that might fit within the comprehensive plan discussion and the rest of that stuff. The time frame on that for the cities, although there's nothing required for the counties, was basically within 6 months of your next regularly scheduled comp plan amendment or update. I believe Oliver's group is still doing some looking into that. I don't know if they have anything at this point or not. But in any case, that was that bill. 1337 was a bill aimed at making ADUs easier and encouraging their development, and so changing a bunch of regulations to make that happen. The vast majority of 1337 is stuff that I believe is going to be covered and included in the housing options study as that comes through. Much of it we're actually already in compliance with. It's things like making sure impact fees don't get too high on the ADU compared to the primary residence. There's provisions in there for some requiring that you have the ability to have detached or attached ADUs. It does qualify that as it's within the urban growth boundary. It doesn't seem to extend that beyond the urban growth boundary in the bill language. It has things in there about allowing two ADUs on properties where they fit, one attached, one detached. This has passed and been signed into law. And so I believe a lot of that stuff, though, will be covered in the housing options study. And if not, the deadlines, including that one, were within 6 months of your next regularly scheduled comp plan update amendments. So in any case, we'll be ahead of the curve on the majority of that stuff. I don't know about the couple of items that were in that bill that were not included in the housing option study. Also, in, it says you can't limit ADUs to less than 1,000 square feet. So that would, but I believe that that element was already included in the housing option study. You can't limit them to say that they have to be less than 1,000 feet. Right now it's at 800 or 40%. This would bump that to 1,000 feet. It gives the jurisdiction the ability to make them larger if they were so inclined, but it says the thousands as small as you can regulate them down to, basically. There's a short list of stuff. I'm not sure how much information you want on that, but that's the gist of it. That has been signed into law. Most of that will be taking place with the housing options study code updates. And then 5491 was one that was initially proposed as becoming a law and a requirement, and after a lot of discussion with a lot of groups, the legislators who put that one forward decided the best course of action is everything that they wanted in the bill, but directed towards a work group or a tag committee at the State Building Code Council to make recommendations on how to achieve this at the next building code cycle. And so the idea is basically to provide five-story buildings with one exit. The aim of this thing was twofold. One of the legislators who was working on this one was an architect herself before she was elected. And the aim was to be able to take buildings that exist already in downtown areas that might be taller than five or six stories now and fill them with dwelling units with a single stairway, which you can't do in a new building code, in a new building. That was kind of the aim of the whole thing. It morphed to some degree, and most of the opposition to it was that there was a lot of technical building code language in the legislation, which is something that, generally speaking, they try to avoid. The legislation usually points people towards a requirement, and then they defer to the State Building Code Council to actually make the technical language of how to meet that requirement. So, for instance, the energy code you'll never see in the legislation, but you'll see that in the work that comes out of the State Building Code Council, that type of stuff. And so this ended up at a place where there's basically have a requirement to assemble a group of people to discuss this particular issue at the State Building Code Council, bring those recommendations back to the legislature, and they hope to adopt those in or some version of that into the next building code council or next building code update, which would be the 2024 codes. So there's a deadline built in to get that in time for those codes. See where that goes. It creates a real building code challenge. It's not insurmountable, but you've got two very distinct codes in the IBC and the IRC, and this is like bridging a gap between the two of them. And so you're almost going to wind up with some weird third code section thing, which is kind of why they had to get it forced into the State Building Code Council. So any questions?
Yeah. So is there some dovetailing of House Bill 1042 and House Bill 5491? Because You're talking about five-story single exit, but I think what you're talking about is a conversion.
Right.
Is that right?
Right.
No. This is a conversion of an existing, like an office building, to residential.
Is 5491 new construction.
Yeah, he was saying it started.
5491 is new construction.
Correct.
I misunderstood.
It started with the architect trying to do conversions on them and then kind of coming to the conclusion, well, if we can convert these buildings with one exit, why couldn't you just build one new with one exit? Most in the fire life safety industries kind of think that's a step backwards, one exit of a building that tall, but nonetheless, so yeah, you could have a building that both those codes would apply to. As it rolls out, a conversion of an existing building and something like that. But yeah.
five-story with single exit is currently allowed in Seattle, and there's a number of buildings that are done that way. It's a kind of an infill development goal for small lots and allows a lot of density in a very small amount of land area.
So does the number of exits depend on the overall square footage of each floor, the height of the building? Yes to all.
You want the technical stuff? It's like you can only have, it has to be a small building. You can only have 4 units per floor.
Okay.
So the stair can only serve 4 units as you go up. And then there's some requirements in terms of like fire response times. It has to be sprinklered.
Mm-hmm.
One hour has type 5A construction. So,
okay. or better.
Yeah,
there's better, yeah, yeah. The building code book is a book of options, just options.
Yeah.
So you can, there's a million ways to skin that cat, but there's a general provision in the building code that once you get over 4 stories, you have 2 separate stair shafts. Generally. Now there's some ways out of that, and Seattle's come up with some stuff for their infill stuff in downtown areas.
I became a landscape architect.
Right.
The residential, you know, even if you're doing a house, you have to have the egress windows in a house. And the idea is, you know, hey, if the stairs are burning, you can always jump out. Well, that's kind of tough to do in a 5-story building. For what it's worth, on the 1042 one, I would just really recommend that the county take a really good look at that, and I think that would be a really good opportunity. It's done a lot, and once again, it's done a lot more in urban cities, converting existing buildings into residential uses, but it's kind of a cool.
And I know that we've had a project, and I don't know if we still are working on it, somebody else is working on it, in the city of Vancouver that was trying to do that, and there were all kinds of, well, you kind of have to have this, you kind of have to do that, you have to retrofit for this, and there was a lot of hoops that they had to jump through in order to get that.
So that's, I think that's the essence of that one. If you've got an existing commercial building
and you're trying to convert it to a residential and meet all of the zoning requirements there, it can be almost impossible, you know, because the planning and zoning requirements for a residential building are so different from commercial buildings. So it's just trying to make it easier that people can do that without.
And that is what the bulk of 1042 is about, is the land use requirements into such a thing. There's some building code provisions in there, but yeah.
So is there anything for us to review and comment at this point, or is this more informational?
Oh. Go ahead, April.
Okay, sorry. I just wanted to make one quick announcement, and that is, as of Monday, Max was appointed the building official, and he's deputy director. So he'll take over the building safety portion, and I will be land use development engineering, the wetland tab, and all the general funders. Congratulations, Max.
Yeah.
Thank you. And Eric asked if there's anything to review and comment. I would highly recommend reading 1042. You could, I don't know what Oliver's schedule is. I know he said he probably wasn't able to get to reviewing this ahead of this meeting, but no doubt as that comes through, there'll be an opportunity to provide some comment or discussion.
Cool.
If you read it now, it's only 5 or 6 pages.
Okay.
You could.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you, Max. Next item is the biannual code written comment for April. I
just added this to the agenda based on the conversations that happened in the last few DEEB meetings. That these recommendations needed to be to April, correct me if I'm wrong, April, by next month?
I thought I said this month.
So
but
it was just a reminder for you.
Yet. So there's still time for the next month.
Thank you. It was just a reminder for Deep.
Good. Thank you, April. Nothing's come along that I know of lately, and I'm usually the clearinghouse in our firm for that stuff, but I'll check around and we'll get anything over to you as soon as we can.
Thank you.
Yeah, there is one item I discussed it with Jennifer Reynolds, and she said that it's already in the process of being corrected. It was something that sounds like it slipped in on the last code amendment. So.
Perfect.
Yeah. With that, we'll move to public comment. Is there anyone here?
No.
Yeah, the public.
Oh boy. Okay. I guess you are. I did circulate an email to a small group of people, but now I understand it got much larger. It was forwarded. The permitting legislation, and I'm not good at the numbers, so that passed this last session had some provisions in there that stated that if a jurisdiction is not able to maintain the 120-day kind of window for permitting, that there were several mitigating measures that they could take, and one is some things to do with engineering stamps. And there are three legislators that I'm speaking with that are interested in exploring what an expansion of that idea could be for the next legislative session. And so specifically what we're looking at is what are some compulsory or low-hanging kind of fruit items, and I will give two that have been brought to my attention, one being single-family stormwater and the other one being solar. That if this legislation was written in a way that said this list of compulsory kind of items is stamped by a licensed and insured engineer with the state of Washington, that it would be more of a filing process than a review process through the jurisdictions. So I understand there's been conversation around this previously, but now we have a piece of legislation that opened the door for a little bit more conversation about it. And so I guess I'm looking to you as the experts if there are specific things that could be on that list, other than solar panels and single-family stormwater, that I'd love to make that list as comprehensive as possible and chat with these legislators about it and with our state organization and lobbyists. So.
Can I ask a follow-up question there? You're referring to a list of items that could be, similar to the notion of having something, your list, your checklist items, and provided it's engineered, being able to have a reduced to almost maybe even nothing for the review part, specifically to give back to these legislators at the state level to build on this permitting legislation that just came out for the next cycle.
Absolutely.
I think there's a little bit. I've just reread your email, Noelle, and I think there's two things that are taking place here. One is the state reinforcing the 120-day review timeline that is currently on the books.
Correct.
That oftentimes and because of staffing and other issues, some jurisdictions are unable to meet. Clark County is not one of them. City of Vancouver is starting to become one of them a little bit. But there are other jurisdictions that take all 120 days. And then once they get to like the last 2 weeks, then they're like, then they go past it. And it was my understanding was that if you go past the 120-day state statute that your project's approved. You're good to go. That hasn't always been interpreted that way, but especially by jurisdictional staff. But that, and then there's another one here. So I'm not really sure what they're trying to do there, but then we're talking about setting up a series of mitigations that should that window not be met, that 120-day window not be met, to be allowed
to the engineer stamp to preempt jurisdictional review is what you just said.
That is actually in the current legislation that passed.
That did pass.
It did pass.
Okay, because it was
they have a list of choices that they can determine.
Because it's my understanding that the other part of this that you're talking about as far as the engineer stamp was kind of like the self-certification process that we talked about years ago that wasn't very, I don't think we were very hip on, that we felt that there is a certain amount of jurisdictional review necessary from a jurisdiction, from an engineering standpoint to make sure that, you know, minimum code requirements are being met. Excuse me, what? Oh, yes. Is that yes? Okay. we've reviewed that. We've been down that road before, mm-hmm. And I think that we are comfortable with where the types and the level of review that staff is providing us in Clark County and most of the other jurisdictions, that they're not overstepping their bounds. That's where it kind of came in, because we had to reel them back in because they were reviewing stuff that was far outside what code was minimally requiring. I'm more interested in what this 120-day thing is, and that's only for land use review, and I'm not sure what other types of reviews fall in that 120-day category. So.
Yeah, and that was kind of my question to you on the 120-day, because Noelle and I talked a little bit about this when session was in, and how what are they deciding for the 120-day rule, right? Because there's jurisdictions who get around it by issuing a like incomplete or a you need to resubmit, and so then your 120 days is actually, you know, 6 months or a year. And so I'm curious, Noelle, because I don't have the details, was there anything that was put in there to help with that portion of it, or do you know?
So it's my understanding, and I'm not necessarily the complete expert on this, but the idea of the legislation is to push it back to the jurisdictions and make the jurisdictions determine exactly what, you know, how they're going to handle this 120-day timeline. And then if they're not, and you can correct me if I'm wrong.
You're on the right track here.
Okay. Yep. 120-day process. And then if they are not able to make it, they have to choose some other ways to mitigate what's going on. And that there's a whole list. One of them is an engineer stamp piece that says, we will accept an engineer stamp as approval for certain compulsory type.
Yeah, and issues. Did they dive into, similar to how there's rosters for jurisdictions, did they dive into that it has to be a certain engineer? Like the engineers in this room would be on that list that the county would deem approved. Did they get into the weeds at all with it, or did they just keep it pretty generic? Do you know?
I mean, it's still legislation that is still being sussed out for actual regulation. So that's where, you know.
Because to Mike's point and April's point, like there was a whole conversation in an industry collaboration at the state level that was talking about you don't want just some guy who happened to get his engineering license being able to stamp it. And so how do the jurisdictions ensure that it's a reputable? So there was some conversation around how there's like the small works rosters, right? Like you can get on a works list. Would there be a roster from the county that they would say if you use one of these particular engineers? Yeah. So
that's almost impossible. I mean, I agree with the principle, you know, but the idea of saying this engineer is okay and this one's not from a public entity, there's just like.
I mean, isn't that a state of Washington? I mean, isn't that their job?
Well,
license and.
Yeah, I'd be happy to point to another agency and say, you know, the Washington State Engineers Association or whoever, pick one, you know, theoretically there's a board that's supervising all this stuff. And so then this is like an extra layer on top of that. And if the state came out with standards that all the jurisdictions could apply to say, well, this is an engineer who fits the bill and this one who isn't, then I think you get jurisdictions to go for that. But you're going to be hard pressed to get a jurisdiction to say, we're good with these people, but not these people. Like
this. Well, this is good. I'm glad that Noelle's bringing this up. It was on my radar. I wasn't sure if this was necessarily the right place to bring this up. So SWCA has a seat at the table for that conversation. And so
Not that I've necessarily been in those conversations. We have someone else who does that for us. But I would definitely love to hear exactly the answers to Noel's questions. Like, what are those things that we can take back that are realistic that can help in some of these pieces, if anything?
I'm seeing head shaking. I'm seeing hands up. But yeah, no, I mean, I'd love to hear, are there things that we can put on a list that are, you know, but if not, we can say thanks, but no thanks.
Some of the other issue with the whole legislation that it, as it sits, is the definition of the terms. We talked about permitting, mm-hmm. and that word, I mean, what does that mean? It means something different to everybody in this room, I can assure
right.
you. And that was, I mean, when we first saw that legislation, we didn't know what they were referring to. Was it a land use process? It couldn't have been a building permit. 120 days was too long. It just didn't make sense. And so then it's like, to define, what does that mean? You take that to an extreme and you go like, well, no, I mean, like, from pre-app to certificate of occupancy. Well, now it's like, well, that's crazy. You know, it's like permitting, right? So they have to define some of those terms and to put some stuff on that. But a lot of what this stuff said was basically, if a jurisdiction doesn't have a plan utilizing these best practices to meet these timeframes, then they have to do X, Y, or Z.
I think there's a component that the group is totally on the same page as you. They would like to see clarification.
Right.
Because it's also hard to take it to the legislators because they don't have a clue when
right.
they hear the word permitting. They assume it's from start to finish and
mm-hmm.
everything that goes on in between. And so there is a component that this group would like to be able to take a bite of the apple, right? Don't consume the whole apple, but what is a piece of that we can take to legislators? We can explain it to them. This is what we're talking about specifically, this piece of it, and get that piece changed in whatever that fashion is. And Noel's right, the engineering stamp was a big piece of it because there's so many jurisdictions statewide that have an issue with that, that's where it gets hung up.
Mm-hmm.
That's the piece that they bid on this time, but I know that there will be more to come.
So a few quick comments, because we've actually done this before already. We've hashed this out. So a few years ago, we looked at one of the council members was really, they wanted to have, if you had an engineering stamp, that it didn't have to go through county review. We reviewed it as a board. We actually worked pretty closely with staff, and we weren't completely on board with it. It wasn't necessarily the best thing for the public or for the industry, and it didn't meet what that there is a purpose to review. Sure, there might be some things that can be streamlined, and that's what we kind of recommended instead. But I can dig out, I'm sure I have them in my files, what we said about the engineering stamp. But really, I think the whole thing about the 120 days, the county meets the 120-day timeline. It really isn't. Sometimes there's complex projects, and we put them on hold. But then that's what they've done to mitigate it, is we, you know, we have an issue that needs a little more study. There's a hold put on it, and then we work that study out. We take it off a hold, and when you take the hold days off, we're at 120 days. That's for a land use permit, for a land use decision. I think the definitions, we need some clarification, because good intentions, but sometimes legislators aren't permit technicians, and they're not engineers and not planners, and they don't understand the process. So sometimes they get some definitions mixed up. And we probably need to look at that. But we may be spinning our wheels and spending a lot of resources on something that's not – we might be solving a problem that doesn't exist here in Clark County. So I would say what we need to do is focus on, like, the problems we actually have. And, you know, the county staff does a pretty good job of hitting that 120 days. So that's – I mean –
I will say I think that this is a unique opportunity for Clark County and the people in this room to influence what the state is going to decide, because if we don't weigh in, everyone else will. And I know that the building industry in particular, I'm sure Noelle's been hearing this now that she's with BIA and working with BIAW, they are thrilled to finally have some organizations in Southwest Washington that are in the space influencing legislation in Olympia, because Seattle has dominated, and so what they decide is what we all are succumbed to. So I think that this is a really good opportunity for us to put something more formal together that either Noelle or myself can take to the industry groups to influence their direction. I don't know how formal it needs to be, if it has to be in this room or just outside of here, but I do think it's an opportunity for us to influence what's going on.
Yeah, I just don't know what we would propose in that regard. We can noodle on a little bit.
Yeah.
Any timeline on it?
So I have a first conversation with them next week.
Oh. Okay.
Noel, the SWCA lobbyist, he's been working on this part, not necessarily working on it, but he's been part of this. Mm-hmm. So maybe he'd be a good person for you to chat with.
I think we'd be more interested to hear what others come up with because, I mean, Clark County in this regard, regarding this particular item, I don't think it applies. I really don't. I think that might be the consensus of the board here, not just me, the one that talks a lot. But I'd be interested in hearing what others come up with for other jurisdictions, because I am also a proponent to stealing shamelessly the best from other jurisdictions, and maybe there is something that comes out, and we're like, oh, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. So can you keep us informed?
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I do think it's also a good segue into that online permitting process that we've been doing to get an update on that and see how it's helping locally. Sounds like it's working, but we haven't had an update on it, and so.
I thought we asked for one here coming up in the next month or so, didn't we?
I mean, the couple people I've talked to, it sounds like it's working, but it sounds maybe like maybe it's not.
We had a little hiccup recently. I think it was resolved within the same day, so.
I guess is there anyone from the staff that has updates on that, or is that something that we should push to August for an update?
We usually get regular updates on the permitting process. It used to be wait times in the permit center, and then we kind of went to more the online stuff. And so I would be interested in maybe getting a quick update from either April or whoever the permit center manager is. Is that you, Phil? Is that your ninth job?
No, the permit center manager is Maureen Patronaggio. But specifically updates on you're talking about Project Docs, our new electronic review, and then updates related to what specifically?
How it's working, right? We haven't heard, we heard all about the rollout, and then it rolled out, and then we haven't gotten an update. Yeah.
And it's always nice to meet people. So I used to come into the permit center four times a week, and now I don't hardly see this building except for this meeting. And so it's nice also to put a face to a name and at least get.
Well, we could certainly. I know she's attended online once or twice, but we could certainly have her make an appearance at the next one. I can give you a brief update as far as I'm aware. The system is working. It's going pretty well. They're continuing to work out minor kinks here and there. I know there are individuals I've spoken to who've had some struggles on the submittal side. I don't want to discount the struggles that they've had on the submittal side, but the stories we're hearing about that are kind of few and far between. Generally, the feedback we're getting is people are able to use it, and sure, it took some getting used to, and yeah, there's elements of it that seem like they're way more cumbersome than before. Large commercial plan sets with single page uploading and things like this is difficult, but that's kind of the way that and much of the software like it works. So overall, it's going pretty well. The timelines for new permit submittals, at least on the building side of things, have been pretty steady. They have increased a little bit. I think the longest one we're out right now is about 3 weeks out to submit a new house, and everything else is less than that, generally speaking.
Is the plan to stick with the two? I guess one of the weird things to me is that there's LMS and then there's Project Doc.
Right.
And that's
we decided when we first did this, because there'd been such a what I'm going to call a yo-yo effect back and forth with the e-plans. We were on and off and on and off, and then we had some changes in leadership in the director role that caused some of that stuff to take place. And so when April took that role, she was intent on getting this accomplished. And the fastest, quickest, easiest way to roll it out was to do it unintegrated. And furthermore, we want to explore all the options with integration, but we wanted to get ePlans up and running and being utilized. So Project Docs, for all intents and purposes, is here to stay. There could be an integration with LMS in the near future. There also might not be. There might be some other new direction on that side of things. So it is a bit goofy, but from an IT standpoint and a cost standpoint, putting the two systems side by side with no integration was quick and relatively inexpensive compared to, so we did it in 12 weeks basically, to integrate anything, even a mild integration, which is just like embedded links that take you from one system to the other, would have taken double the time and a lot more money than complete integrations where you don't know you're leaving the one site and going to the other. It's fully customized. And that's a lot of the issues we've had with LMS over the years, that it's too customized. So then as you maintain and update, every time you do that, it's you're working on a, think of working on a Honda Accord. It's just from the factory, and then some race car. Every time you get into it, it's like, well, this is a custom part, and it's going to require, you know, it's just like, so we try to avoid a lot of that stuff with the deals, which is why there's two. And but we are having conversations as we speak and have been for several months with potential integrations and ways to make that into one more seamless experience. So,
Seth, I don't think we have to have anybody come in and give us an update on the new system.
One comment that I'd heard was is that with regard to like payment, the city of Vancouver, when you upload and you pay, it automatic or you send in your application, you get the fee, you make the payment, it automatically sends you the upload link. And I think the step here at the county is one extra where you have to email and let somebody know, and they have to create the upload link and then send it along.
Is that still a thing?
Oh yeah. And if you email a different person if it's pre-app versus land use versus a building permit, so there's all these different emails.
Right, right.
That's if you email the wrong person, nobody ever tells you that.
We had that recently happen where we sent in an email on Friday, and then I think yesterday we got an email with the holiday and stuff that, it went to the wrong email, and, you know, so then it's, you know, another almost a week delay ends up being, but...
That's good feedback and something for us to for sure consider. That is a product of the systems not being integrated. In Vancouver, they're integrated, so the payment portion of it is tied to the system so that when you pay, it does something for you. Here, that they're two separate systems. Good feedback. What we have here is this, you know, decade-long version of the Permit Center where it's your one-stop shop for everything you could possibly do in community development. And what we've been slowly doing for various reasons is making each group responsible for their own applications. So when you're filing a land use application, you're dealing with land use staff. And when you're filing a building permit, you're dealing with building permit staff or permit center staff. And so that's part of the issue there, but that is good feedback to maybe have one point of contact for all the payment related stuff or something like that.
All right, well, we'll move to public comment online. Teresa? Teresa, go ahead, and we can't hear you if you're speaking.
Okay, good afternoon, Teresa Hardy. I'd like to make a couple observations and comments as in regards to public engagement around the Planning Commission and the housing options. It was a 42 vote. It was Matt Swindle and Jack Haroon who voted not to move it forward. And during the Planning Commission, there was questions and concerns from Matt on the ADUs. And I think one of his was that I think that there's no parking space required for it. And I'm not sure if it wasn't the square footage. With Jack Haroon, in fact, Carl Johnson, near the end of the meeting, acknowledged Jack for a lot of the details that Jack brought up in regards to certain design standards and other things. So that would be interesting to go back and re-listen to what he said. But so then he was a no vote, but just before they said that they couldn't pass it along, they had to pass it the way it was. Actually, Eldon Wogreen, I think that's his name, he actually made a motion to, because he was not for any design standards, and he made that motion and no one seconded it, so it just fell. So those were some interesting observations. The thing that you have talked about before that was also brought up during the Planning Commission, that hearing, was this whole thing with parking. And in listening to your previous meetings, I think it's Mr. Galimo who's raised the concern about one parking space per, I think it's the duplex, the triplex, I'm not sure if it's the quadruplex, it's the sixplex. and what that creates for, you know, parking on the street, people parking on sidewalks and things. And it seems like staff is really in favor of just the one parking space. And I'm not sure what your position is now. Brian Snodgrass did call in during that meeting from the city, and he was in favor of, you know, keeping these parking spaces to one. So from a public perspective, as it moves forward, what is parking going to look like with all these units? So that's just a few comments. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Is there anyone else online?
Yes, this is Oliver. I just want to give you just very quick update. I meant to communicate with Max before this meeting, but wasn't able to. I think Max covered the 1042 bill. We are taking a look at that. We haven't come to any conclusions. I think Max also covered the next bill, which was 1337, dealing with accessory dwelling units. Max is correct. We have covered all the provision in that bill in the code, housing code update. So everything we have done so far and the previous update to accessory dwelling unit is consistent with that new bill, 1337. I also wanted to give you all heads up that if you're not familiar with it, I don't know yet how that will impact housing construction in here in Clark County, but the legislature also passed a climate action bill, which we had a work session with council on the 28th. That is now mandated that Clark County and all the cities here in Clark County, with the exception of those cities like town of Yakult and the city of Los Angeles, whose population is less than 6,000. So they are not required to have a climate action plan or element in there as part of this plan update. So I will urge you at your convenience, read that bill. It's 1181. It's a long, laundry list of items we have to do now, reducing greenhouse emission and reducing vehicle mile traveled. There's just so much in it that will touch every aspect of what we do in terms of land use planning here in Clark County and the cities that are required to have a climate action plan. Finally, there's also a bill now that requires the cities to literally adopt county's critical area ordinance going forward. So any of the cities here in Clark County that opts to adopt our critical area ordinance, they are now by statute required to do so. Finally, I believe last week or a week before, Clark County gave direction to my department to work with the fire district to now have fire impact fees. We are having dialogue with the fire district to see what the fire impact fee formula is going to look like. So when we are at a point where we will be amending our current impact fee code, I will come to DEEP to share with you what that will entail and how that will be implemented going forward. But the county gave direction to staff to work with the fire district to now have add a fire as part of the impact fee. Currently, we have transportation, school impact fee, and parking impact fee. So there will now be fire impact fees. I don't know when that will become effective. Just want to share that with you all. And we did receive from Scott Bailey at the Employment Department Security, the employment projections for the 2025 plan update. I got that this morning. So we will have a work session with council on July 12th. I don't know when the county will post Scott Bailey's memo and forecast probably before the end of the day. And as from tomorrow, you'll be able to access that on the council grid. A hearing on that is yet to be scheduled, where the council will have a hearing and then either adopt the memo from Scott Bailey or, that's who we rely on. The Growth Management Act doesn't provide us employment forecast. We have to generate that locally based on the population numbers that the council have chosen. And that was the basis for the employment projection that Scott provided us. Just a quick rundown of what is happening that I think you should know. A hearing on that will likely be sometime in August. And I must also share with you that we will be having a work session August 30th. So there will be an opportunity, if Deep wants, we can come to you and share the current 2023 vacant buildable lands run. That all going to be part of the conversation. We'll have August 30th, a work session with council on the vacant buildable lands model. The goal there will be to just provide this new council an overview of how we use the model in planning, in our planning processes. Other than that, we are not rehearsing the assumptions and any of that decision that the council have made before. So this will just be an overview of how we use the model. And you all know that Bob Poole retired, and he still has good staff that understands the model. So this will be their first work session with council, but we will have ample time to share all this with Deep prior to going to council. That's all I have. Yes. Thank you.
So Oliver, would that be at the next, so the August 3rd meeting or after the work session?
We can have at the August 3rd Deep meeting, we can come with overview of the vacant buildable lands model if we have a presentation material that we can share with you. The hearing on the employment forecast, I will also let Deep know prior to the August or at the August 3rd meeting. So I will have more to share with Deep or come to Deep prior to the council work session or hearing. There is not enough time to share with Deep the employment forecast. Like I said, I just got it this morning and I worked so hard. I'm already late. By the time council wants material for a work session on July 12th to be provided to them. So I'm a day late, but you know, there is no penalty. So anyway, but if you like any information from me, I will work with April and her staff to be available to come to Deep whenever it's possible.
I don't know as if the employment stuff is really necessary, but I really would be interested in the vacant buildable lands model because I've got some questions about that.
So we can do both.
Or we can do both.
They're related.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then.
And say I'm interested in both.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, the jobs numbers directly to the vacant buildable lands. That's where we put the jobs.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. To do both.
Yeah, and same people.
Perfect.
All right. Well, thank you, Oliver. We'll look forward to hearing more about that at the next meeting. With that. The next meeting is August 3rd, and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.